My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons. Welcome to another episode of the show. This week is a fun topic. We look at not just the question of what is a game you consider the greatest all time, but what is a game that is considered to be a greatest of all time caliber game that you have not played, and then why. We kind of elaborate on that. So I had some fun answering this question and asking this question to my guests. And those folks this week are my wife, Nicole, and Andrew Elmore again. So back to the show again. The conversations I had with Andrew were great. So I love having him on the show. So hopefully we'll have him back in the near future as well. But yeah, the first part of the episode will be with Nicole. And then after the break, we'll get into Andrew. But they both answer that question is, what's that GOAT game that you haven't played and why? I got some other news at the top of the episode. I've got, as I mentioned before in the last week's episode, but my Patreon page is live. This is where I've posted a few things already. You can see that it is completely free to follow. You do not have to pay any of like the paid tiers. And I plan to release a bunch of like writing and content and behind the scenes things. Definitely like a lot of extra things that, you know, people will hopefully be able to enjoy and that won't cost you a dime. There's plenty of free content planned that I'll have there. I just want to use that source and that page as the umbrella to all that kind of the retro gaming content that I'm kind of putting out. Now, of course, if you do support one of the paid tiers, I want it to be worth it. So I'll be taking like voice clips, like you can record like a voice memo of your own question, like answer the question of the week to have included in a future episode. And I'll be able to kind of have more interactivity with folks who want to be a part of that. I'll also have polls and things like that to help me refine the list of what games I'm going to include in the next 32-bit library book. It's going to be 32-bit library volume 5, greatest hits. So it's going to look at Sony has like 200 and you know what? It's probably even a bigger list than that, but there is it's a quite a large number of list of games that they re-released under that greatest hits banner. And so this is a chance to have games that were from different publishers, different developers, not necessarily tied to one specific vision, but the connective tissue here for this volume or this first part of it will be the greatest hit releases. So we'll go through and have polls that will be able to help kind of vote and whittle down like which 50 games we want to ultimately include in the book. I'll have extra bonus content there as well. And then also working on a completely separate book project specifically tied to my love for the Final Fight games and that series of books. I've kicked around ideas about it forever, and I figured now's the time to do that. So, again, all this weird stuff I'm doing, all the podcast, the writing, all of the everything that I've been trying to like kind of put together, it's all there on the Patreon page. You can find that link in the show notes here. And like I said, join the free tier for sure, because again, you're going to get a lot there. And then if you do see the interest and the desire to do more, I'm hopefully going to give you enough content to make it worth it for the $3 or $6 tiers. I've also got a bonus show on there, an entire extra podcast called Single Player. I've got two episodes that are already posted and up there as well too, so you can listen to a preview of one of the episodes and kind of get an idea of what that looks like. But yeah, anyway, enough selling myself. I got a lot of content there. I've got a newsletter you can also sign up to that does go out. Just it's going to go out super infrequently, just to kind of share when I launch a new project or have a new announcement to make. But please click the links, follow along, give reviews, retweet, share, promote it, you know, whatever you can do that kind of helps me. I would very much appreciate just kind of getting the word out to other like retro gaming fans and new people to maybe be exposed to the stuff that I'm doing. So thank you all for listening again another week. Thanks for this extra long intro with me kind of promoting my stuff. But yeah, I appreciate you. Enjoy the episode. Welcome back, Nicole, to another episode. Thank you for coming in clutch with our recording schedule before vacation.
Of course, no problem.
We were recording this like before the Friday before this will be released, but that will be when we are in San Diego for Comic-Con and a little family vacation. So, yeah, that should be fun. So, yeah, we're doing this last minute so I can make sure I have an episode even while I'm not in the state or on a computer, and that's just me being proper. So you're welcome, people listening. Thank me. But yes, so Nicole, you're back for the icebreaker before we get into the main question. What collectible would you need to find if your life was a video game?
If my life was a video game, what collectible?
Yeah.
Like a secret item in a game type of thing? Or,
well, you
or,
know, Sonic, you Sonic collects rings, Mario collects coins.
Oh, okay. Well, you know me. Anytime we've ever played any game, I want to collect all of the things. I don't know how many times you've told me, who cares? Just leave it. So,
yeah, what would be your collectible?
I'm going to say it would be like a coin.
A coin?
Yeah. Yeah, I like coins. I like coins. Gold coins. Gold coins, but also I really would like them to sound like the Sonic rings when you get them, because I love that sound. It's so like, I don't know, I love it.
I was thinking this would be more like, you know, like what is there an item that you personally like that, you know, if you were made into a video game, like, you know, are they like garden plants or are there like things like that? But if you want to collect coins and have Sonic rings, that's fine. You know, that's also an answer. So
yeah, well, I wasn't thinking about it like that. I don't know. Well, now you got my head just thinking more about like me personally.
Well, that was the question.
I know, but like I was hung up on the video game part, so like I wasn't thinking about like, I don't know. Anyways, it would be bugs, I think.
Bugs.
Yeah, so just like I think if there was like a something where you would lift like a rock or like a box or something off the ground and a little bug like scurries along and you have to chase it to catch it, and that somehow gives you like points or money or I don't know. But it would still sound like Sonic rings.
Okay. All right, that's the answer then. All right. Okay, well then let's get into the main episode then. And I think this will be interesting just because you're not as like hardcore, you know, or like lifelong of a game player. Like you have experience with, you know, the games you like, and you do that at your own pace, you know, years apart, whatever it might be. That's fine. But what's a game you've heard like, you know, people talk about, or like, you know, people consider to be like one of the greatest of all time, like level or tiers of games that you've never played but maybe have had, you know, interest in playing, and why did you not play it?
Okay, so I don't necessarily know if it's like a widely like talked about game or if it has like great reviews. I have no idea. But I love the game Chrono Trigger. I'm, for some reason, I haven't picked up the controller in probably a couple of weeks, but I started replaying the game. I think just because I was listening to one of your podcasts and I was like, you know what, I want to play some games. So I picked it up knowing, you know, I love the game. I love the gameplay. You know, I love the storyline and everything. So I started playing Chrono Trigger again. I'm almost done playing or finishing the game, but for some reason, past couple of weeks, I haven't played. The game would be Chrono Cross. Any time that I have ever talked to somebody about Chrono Trigger, whether it be like, you know, just like a random person, like at work, when I used to work in like retail jobs and, you know, have like a gaming conversation or something. And usually people would say like, oh, have you played Chrono Cross? And I'm like, no, I've never played Chrono Cross. I've only played Chrono Trigger. I know it's in the same world. I don't know if it's a sequel. I've never really read into it or anything at all. But it is a game that I would like to play just because, you know, it's still tied, being in the same world as Chrono Trigger. I think the other thing, or like maybe one of the other reasons why I haven't even like tried playing it, is because it's really hard for me to get past looking at like the polygonal characters. I don't like the way the hair looks. I don't like the movements of characters. I don't know. I just never really like the look of those types of like characters and character models and things like that. So that's kind of been like the main reason why I've never like actually picked up the game to play it. Yeah, it's kind of an odd like thing to say, but that is my reasoning.
That's funny. Well, I mean, I do enjoy the old clunky pixels and junky looks of those games, and I get the warm, fuzzy nostalgia feelings. You know, that's why this podcast even exists. I think that I'd be curious to know. Like, I do think that once you finish Chrono Trigger, because we do own Chrono Cross, like it's sitting on our shelf, and I have it installed on that on the Polymega for you.
Yeah.
Like, I'd like to be, you know, like to see you try it out and see what it is. Or even, there's like I told you, you know, offline, there is a, like an enhanced version of it, like re-released, the Radical Dreamers edition, but it's on like everything, like a Switch and PlayStation and everything. So it's definitely something, you know, it's available for you to play. But, that absolutely is a greatest game of all time contending title. It, when it first released, EGM, the gaming magazine that I used to love, they famously did not give a lot of games like perfect scores. Like they were for whatever reason really stringent on like which games would get like their platinum award. For one, you had to have all the editors. It used to be a 4-person review crew, and then it scaled down to a 3-person review crew. But all three of them had to have given it a 10 for it to have, you know, gotten a platinum for any game. But yeah, not a lot of games got it. Chrono Cross from EGM, back in its original review, got a 10, a 10, and a 9.5. So it just missed out on that perfect word. Yeah. But other magazines also loved it. I think the official US PlayStation magazine gave it like 5 out of 5, and like it was a game of the year for like GameSpot, like their website and everything. And then actually I'll look it up real quick. And then the overall like Metacritic score for the game is a 94 out of 100.
Wow,
it is just a highly praised game. It is like, it is not like a direct sequel to Chrono Trigger, but it does have like themes and elements. There are some, when I was doing research for it for the my 32-bit library volume 4 coming soon to Amazon and other sources for you to purchase, they did begin with some threads of some like actual like characters from Chrono Trigger to reappear, but they ended up like redrafting them and recreated them just into original characters. But they were going to try and maybe have some little connective tissue there, but ultimately did not. But yeah, instead of time travel, you're in like parallel dimensions is kind of like the little bit of the gimmick in this game.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd be curious to see you try it out and play it. Like it is, yeah, it is a significantly highly praised game, and if you can get over your polygonal bias, you may find something you enjoy there. I'd be curious to see.
Yeah, it is like legitimately like the polygons that I just don't like that has really like just been holding me back from ever really like giving it a chance. And that's crazy to hear like about those reviews, because yeah, that's just wild. Is what was Chrono Trigger's? I mean, I'm not like you. I don't really look at like, you know, reviews and critics and scores and shit like that. Like, let's play a game. If I like it, I like it.
Yeah.
What did Chrono Trigger get compared to?
Chrono Trigger also got really good reviews. It's more like cult status. It was almost like an instant cult game, like after it was released and everything. Let me look it up and I'll see if I can find the exact numbers there. Let's go back here. Okay, so the Metacritic overall, like that's just, you know, they compile like reviews from a whole bunch of different places just to get the average of the review averages of all of these sources. For Chrono Trigger, it has a 92 out of 100 overall score, which is slightly lower than Chrono Cross, technically.
Crazy.
Yeah, it did. But Chrono Trigger, during its release, it was widely praised and everything. It got, you know, GamePro, it says here, gave it best RPG. EGM also at the time gave it best role-playing game, best Super NES game, and best music in a cartridge-based game for their annual rewards.
That's another thing that I'm curious about. Do they use the same composer? Because I love the music in Chrono Trigger.
Yeah. No, they do not, unfortunately.
Sad.
The Nobuo Uematsu, who's like famously like the early Final Fantasy series composer and all that stuff, he helped with the original Chrono Trigger. It wasn't him solely or anything. So the other composer, I don't remember, you know, who it was, and I'm not going to go back to the link and just read Wikipedia to you. But it did. That is one of the changes. The same. While Chrono Trigger was cooked up original by like Sakaguchi, who helped create Final Fantasy, and Yuji Horii, who helped create Dragon Quest, and then Akira Toriyama, who did the artwork for it. They were like the big three to help like lay the foundation for the game, but really like the writer of the game and the director of the game were different people. They helped kind of just oversee it almost from like a high level like producer standpoint. But the person who did write Chrono Trigger is the same person who came back and wrote Chrono Cross. So it is, there is like connective like tissue.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's pretty cool. I think that makes me a little bit more motivated to actually like, you know, pop it into that Polymega and play it. I don't think that I would want to play it on the Switch.
This, here you go. Yasunori Mitsuda. He was the other composer on Chrono Trigger and is listed in the credits for the, being the composer for Chrono Cross. So
nice.
There's a lot there. I really want to see you try it. So finish your replay of Chrono Trigger. And even though it's not necessary story wise, but just finish that and then start this one up. I'd like to see where how you think.
Yeah. I think that is a challenge I'm willing to do, and I will commit to playing it all the way through as soon as I finish Chrono Trigger again. And then maybe we'll talk about it again.
All right. Maybe you can then consider like what is a game you consider to be the greatest of all time. Maybe, you know, you will also personally consider it and you could talk about it then.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Nicole. Let's wrap this up and let me edit while you pack all the boring toiletry stuff for our vacation, and then we'll be done for the day and head to San Diego.
Woohoo!
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye.
Welcome back to the show. I do want to hit you with another icebreaker, just something to jar your memory. And
there was a pause there. I thought you were just going to hit me. I was like, all right, that's fair.
Physical attacks. Start now. Let's see if you, this one might come to mind better than the last one. The last one I hit you with was the game with a color in its title. This is, what is your favorite vehicle or mode of transportation in a video game?
Oh man, I'm going to rule out like racing games and stuff where it's like, that's your main method, you know, flight sims, whatever.
You can't say,
like, that's the whole game.
Yeah, you can't say Dodge Viper, and you can't say On Laguna Seca, right. And that hairpin turn.
Yeah. Like, the first thing that comes to mind is the Warthog, and that's not actually my answer, but I'm like, yeah, the Warthog, obviously.
That's what I was thinking.
But I can't
you
just keep
do.
Saying Halo things at you. That's not.
I was thinking you might say that, and it would have been an easier way for you to get out of it, but let's see. Let's see where you go to.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what else is, like, really fun to just, like, whip around in. Drawing a complete blank. Again, I've never played a video game before. Yep. Can't think of a single one.
That's how it happens.
I'm going to say not Jack 2. That's my answer. Just not Jack 2.
Just not Jack 2. Okay, good. Yep. Good. They tried to really, like, go from one end of the world to the other in that game. From Jack 1 to Jack 2, they just... Yeah, it's the same genre, but we're going to really get as far away from that as what we can. And people loved it, and some people just didn't play it. And
GTA 3 sold a lot of copies.
Yeah. And the influence was strong. So yes. not Jack 2. And also asterisk, you know, the Warthog from Halo. We'll allow that, just because that's a fun way to kind of travel around. The other thing you could have said was the version of whatever skates or rollerblades in Jet Set Radio, Jet Grand Radio, you know.
Also, I mean, if we want to just get all the way down into, like, movement and momentum in general, I don't know, it's probably some, like, parkour-focused free-running game, right? Like, you know, not necessarily like a Mirror's Edge or Ghost Runner or Neon White or something like that. I don't know. Yeah, but I mean, that's just running around. That's just stuff on your feet. What is it? How do we define a vehicle, first of all?
Well, I mean, that's why I tried to, like, throw in mode of transportation. So,
I don't know. No, that's fair.
Shoes, you know, now, yeah, we're really just breaking the question. Yeah, so,
yeah, I don't know, man. Just like Tony Hawk.
Yeah, skateboards.
Sure.
Right on. Well, thanks for coming on to do another episode. Today we are going to ask a question, and I'll pick the other ones here on the list that we've got, we kind of pre-thought about and kind of we're discussing. I like the idea of this one, but what is a greatest game of all time that you've never played? And so I'd love to hear what is one of yours that you consider, you know, one of the greatest games of all time that you've never played, but also maybe like to hear a little bit about why, like, was there circumstances or reasons that you didn't? Do you intend to maybe try it one day, or is it going to be too far gone to do so? But what is that GOAT game that you've never played?
Yes, I think there are probably bigger holes in my, like, I don't know, what would you call it, backlog here, but the one that jumped out to me immediately upon reading that was Vagrant Story.
Mm.
On the PlayStation. Perhaps you've heard of it. It's a computer entertainment system, I'm told.
Released December 3rd, 1995 in Japan.
299.
That's a deep cut, man. I wonder who's gonna get that. That's a good one.
The real ones will get that.
The mic distortion too, just an authentic. Oh, that was really good.
I know. I'm so sorry. But no, it's. How to put this? Vagrant Story looks absolutely fascinating to me. I've been captivated by that game for a very long time. I know next to nothing about the story or narrative other than I think it's an Ivalice. That's about all I've got. But technically and artistically, it's astounding, especially for a late PS1 game made by, as I understand it, a lot of people that were not particularly experienced in game development yet. So they didn't know what the rules were, so they made up new ones in terms of things like faking dynamic lighting or rim lighting on character models and stuff like that. It's kind of like, you know, the way that we're talking over on Flashback 64 about the GoldenEye team being a lot of newcomers as well. Mm-hmm. Just kind of like, we don't know that this isn't how you do it, so we just made up our own way to do it. Like, we just came up with our own solution to these problems of various kinds. And it just seems really, I don't know, I think I would probably have a great time with a lot of that game. However, the combat system and the way that people talk about it has been extremely intimidating, mm-hmm. and has kept me away from it for years, because I'm afraid that it will be a really difficult on-ramp, a really steep climb to get into it and to figure out how anything works in there. And then kind of increasing the understanding of it throughout the game and, like, you know, how the systems work and stuff like that and how you can manipulate them and in what circumstances, whatever. I don't know, man. People just talk about that game like it is, I don't know, Dwarf Fortress or something. Like, they just make it sound like this inscrutable, like, super complicated thing that has freaked me out for a long time. I don't know. It's stupid, but it's also, like, I'm afraid that I think getting into it would take too long. Like, to, like, kind of get the momentum. Well, that's also kind of just any big JRPG, though. Like, I'm always mm-hmm. just like, man, do I have, like, the time and attention to, like, get, like, into this thing? Like, mm-hmm. the few play sessions it's going to take before, like, you know, the ball gets rolling? And I don't even know if that's the case in this one. I just,
I had never played it prior to the last book that I just finished working on, which mm-hmm. covered all of Square's games. So I had played it for that, to actually get hands on and, like, take the screenshots and everything for it. So my idea, I don't know, like, I definitely knew it was more, like, atmospheric, and, like, I knew that, like, the art style and, like, this really cool, like, 3D look to it and everything was always amazing, and I always, like, even now, like, it does look fantastic. But, like, the gameplay-wise, like, I thought it definitely was more RPG-centric. I thought there was way more RPG elements, and there are some, like, weapon customizations and upgrade systems in this, and, like, you do... you can take damage and, like, to, like, different limbs and everything.
It's a mech game?
No, but it's just on your person. You can, like, disable somebody's arm by attacking their arm to prevent them from being able to hit you harder. And, I mean, it's almost...
See, I'm nodding like a maniac because this is Mech Warrior to me. or Bushido Blade. I don't know. One of the...
Yeah. And then it's...
stop interrupting.
But it lets you kind of, like, pause combat in between attack turns and stuff like that. Like, almost Parasite Eve 1-like, you know? And then, like, you can see your range of attack and everything. But then they hit you with this, like, rhythm Parappa the Rappa style, like, if you chain together with the right button timing, like, that will string together combos for extra skills and additional damage and stuff. So it fuses so much together, and there aren't actually any other, like, NPCs or people that you come across. It's just you alone in all of these dungeons and labyrinths and things that kind of connect to the story. Across other characters, and, like, they're in cutscenes and everything, but in your environments you're pushing boxes and just finding your way through. But I was... From what I've heard of it and what everyone speaks about it and how it's always been carried this weight around, like, when I finally got to, like, hands-on play it, it was like, okay, this is not at all the game that I thought it was. So not in a bad way, but it was just like, oh, okay, well, like, had I known this, like, maybe I probably would have played this much earlier, and or when, especially when I was, like, younger, because it wasn't as intimidating in my brain as I kind of built it up to be. But it's also crazy, the Ivelisse, like, you know, like you mentioned, like, the director who kind of like led through like Final Fantasy Tactics and, you know, goes through all those other things. Like that was the last game they worked on together was Final Fantasy Tactics, like 2D, like something that was clearly just being lifted from a 16-bit era into this like generation. And then a few years later, like they have this fully rendered 3D game, like with like full cinematic, like scope and scale. Like it definitely was a game that they would probably be intimidating to be a part of that development team for sure, as they kind of like learned and navigated through all of that. So, yeah, beautiful looking game though. And I love just the character art and everything about it visually.
Yeah. The environments are just breathtaking. There's nothing else like it on the PS1. I think overall, like it's, I think one of the most, like just in terms of technical art, I think it's one of the most impressive games in like history. It's up there.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
It like late game and what they squeeze out of the PlayStation. Like it's just, it's kind of cool. It like, to me, it's like Shadow of the Colossus on PS2. Like you really squeezed a lot of that hardware. And yes, Shadow of the Colossus can dip down into, you know, 10 frames per second, maybe lower. Yep. And you're watching some still frames kind of slide by on the screen. But for what it was like really squeezing out of the PS2, it was really cool. And this definitely got its money's worth of the PS1 hardware for sure. Yeah, that being said, do you think you will give it a shot? Do you think there's an afternoon sometime where you finally do play that game? Or is it just going to be one of those ones that, you know, as new games continue to roll out, like it's always just going to be in there in the back of your head unplayed?
That's where it's been. And I want to tell you that I'll get around to it, because deep in my heart, I believe that I will. And I do tend to eventually get around to most of the stuff in my backlog. But that's definitely a big gaping hole, along with a lot of JRPGs, to be honest. I think... prior to 2019, the only JRPGs I had to like played through and finished were Pocket Monsters Yellow and Silver as a kid. And that was it. Those were the last Pokemons I played and the last JRPGs I really like spent that much time with, I think, until I finally got around to starting to clean that up, because I didn't grow up with like a PS1 and PS2 and stuff, so I didn't have a lot of these games like in my life or around, so I just missed them for the most part. So it was a lot of just like hearing people talk about things for a very long time, and eventually being like, okay, I need to know what people are talking about. I need, like, for my literacy in this medium to be closer to where it needs to be for me to do what I do, I need to understand this stuff and go back and really start digging into it. So I am really looking forward to whenever I get around to playing that game. And I do want to. It's just, I mean, both the hour count and like system depth is, I think, what gets in the way for a lot of JRPGs for me. Just because it's difficult to be able to make that long of a commitment to any game that's not like really easy to pick up and put down. And part of that is just, have kids, you know, like it just makes life weird. But I think I can do it. I have it. I don't have an excuse. I own a copy of it. Like I can put it in a dang PlayStation and be done with it. But like,
Yeah, the time sink, it's tough. I am now much better with, like, I won't buy a game or like queue a game up or get it ready until like I finished or I know I'm not going to play any more of like the previous game I'm working on. I might juggle like a couple of different like genres, so I might have two or three games floating around. Like I had like Balatro earlier this year while I was playing some of Persona Reload and stuff like that, because it's different scope, different scale, different feel. But last year I had, it was just this gauntlet, and I'd never since, like, it was not since I was like an early, you know, 10, 11, 12 year old PlayStation gamer with RPGs. Like I'd played that Theater Rhythm Curtain Call from start to finish, which is not really an RPG, but still, like, I got the platinum trophy and it was almost 100 hours of my save file.
Jeez.
And then I went into which one was immediately next? I think it was Final Fantasy 16 then comes out, and I decide to, like, hey, I'm going to go ahead and get that platinum trophy in this game as well too. So for a few months, like, that's really all I'm really playing. And then something else came along. I swear it was... I'm sorry. So it was Theater Rhythm, then it was Octopath Traveler 2. Platinum trophied that, played through, loved that to death. And then 16 hit, which was like all summer into the fall. And I thought, okay, well, there's my gaming year right here in these three games. But in December, Star Ocean Second Story R came out. I had never played that originally. And I'm like, well, clearly, like, I've scratched the JRPG itch. Like, I'm clearly, this is the year for me to, like, play this. I might as well just jump right into this and fully finish that. So four games, basically, in the entire year I played, all because they had, like, 100-plus hour, like, playtime counts. And like, I don't know how I did it, but in 1 year. And but it's so crazy because in years past I would have picked up, dabbled in, played 4 or 5 hours of something, maybe I'll come back to this, let me try this next new thing that's out this week, and like been going through games like crazy just to kind of experience them or just kind of get a taste to see if they hooked me or not. But that was just like a deliberate choice to just like, I will finish a game before I buy my next. And unfortunately I keep buying games that are 100-hour investments. It was nuts.
Like drawing yourself into that corner, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm not doing any service this year too, with Persona Reload and then Yuden Chronicles, and there are other genres there are other genres out there, and I want to experience them, but I don't know why I keep doing this myself.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm up to my eyeballs in SMT Vengeance right now, so I feel you.
That's one that I'm like, maybe I buy that now, but I can't do that. And I don't know what I'm gonna do. But I do have an answer to this question myself. A GOAT game that I've never played, and I've traditionally always been like a console person. I've just never could like afford like good PCs or like kind of maintain like building and maintaining like good PCs for gaming. But Half-Life 2 is a game that I've never experienced beyond like when it first came out. I want to say in that Orange Box collection on 360. I was like, oh cool, I'll try this for a little bit. And I maybe played like the first hour or two, like just a little bit, and then fell in love with like Portal and other things in that set, so like never really went back to it. And then when I did get a PC and I had a chance and, you know, started building a Steam library, I'm like, all right cool, you know what, I should play Half-Life 2. So I started it up. I pretty much got to the same point just a couple hours into it, maybe not very far at all. Enough to like, you know, pick up a can and throw it in a guard's face instead of in the trash can, and like really seeing like I,
as is tradition.
Yeah, I get the like the complete and like utter like love and affection that people have for that game, but like it's just weird that I've just completely skipped and omitted like doing that at all. The story and the environment seem great. Like the focus on like the narrative and storytelling like throughout, like a really well designed like technical achievement that the game is as well. Like the games that it went on to inspire that I did also like play and love and everything. I just somehow I've always skipped and never played through Half-Life 2. And then, you know, any of the follow-ups, episode 1 or 2 or the long, but never ever going to release episode 3.
This is going to get me in trouble, but I think you're good.
Oh, okay.
I don't think Half-Life 2 is very good.
Oh, right. There you go. And that's the end of the episode. That's it.
Yeah, I brought the hot take machine. I'm going to paint a giant target on my head.
But I mean, I think honestly that's part of what I think is in the back of my mind. Like, because I know other people, I know it is like considered that for a lot of people. Like, I know that's there's other games I've played that I don't necessarily hold the same status for and love as much as people do. And there's games that I consider that and people don't, you know, equate that. So like I've like kind of given up to the idea that like, yes, people do love this, but maybe it's just not for me, and that might be okay, you know? Like, it's not that I disliked it or anything, but, like, I'm just okay with, like, that's just one that I just won't ever play, probably, and that's okay. Because at this point, if I do try and go back, it was a big deal at the time, I think, from the technology standpoint, and so many other games have already iterated on top of what that did and everything, so I won't have that same impact. So then I'm just going to be looking at it for its narrative, which, again, games have also improved on how the narrative is even delivered in a video game, you know, and like, so it's going to be dated like even then. So I don't know that I'll really, I just know that if I do play it, it's not going to be give me the same experience. So that's why I've decided to kind of not play it, because I wouldn't be doing it a good service.
Yeah, that's fair. I think it's definitely one that kind of suffers from that Seinfeld effect, right? Where like it's tough to go back to freshly now because you've already encountered so many things that are that have taken the like the big things that game did and taken that ball down the field, so to speak.
Are you telling me that Gordon Freeman dated like a teenage girl and it makes it uncomfortable for you to go back and like play through Half-Life? Or that's just
the
Seinfeld thing?
Is that supposed to be a teenager? I always thought she was like mid-20s or something.
No, I'm just kidding.
No, like having...
The Seinfeld thing.
Oh, that thing. Yeah, no, Jerry Seinfeld being a pedophile is a whole other problem. Yeah. It's... Like, I think a lot of the cool stuff, like the facial animation work in that game, like there's so much cool tech stuff happening, that I think is worth, celebrating for 2004.
Mm-hmm.
Generally speaking, I think in terms of just like a video game that you play and a shooter campaign and a narrative and stuff like that, I think, even at and for its time, I think, Half-Life 2 is pretty well below average.
You heard it here first, folks. You heard it here first. Cool. Well, that's good to know. I can appreciate that series and that universe did create Portal and Portal 2, which yeah. I absolutely love those games.
It's great.
So those are fantastic, fun experiences for sure. But Half-Life's just not going to do it. Not going to do it for me.
Yeah. Whatever it's worth, I love Half-Life 1. I finally finished that for the first time a couple years ago on the PS2 port of all things, and then played it through like 3 more times on different PC versions. But Half-Life 1, great, heck of a game, love it.
Yeah, reading the GamePro review of the Dreamcast version of Half-Life 1 made me want to go out and buy it, but as it turns out, that was just a significantly early advertised build and didn't actually happen. But
I mean, there's a pretty far along build out there you can play through significant chunks of, but I mean, yeah, it's not done.
Major Mike failed me, or Scary Larry, or whoever the reviewer was of that game. But this is a cool fun. All right, well, thank you, Andrew. That's another cool.
Got myself in trouble. That's
No, I don't think so. I don't think so at all. We're allowed to have our thoughts and opinions. That's what you ask. I mean, this question will be asked to other people, and you know they'll have their own hot takes and versions of it and everything as well too. So. Absolutely appreciated for the honesty and the conversation. So, I think that'll wrap this episode, and we'll definitely look forward to having you on in future episodes for sure.
Right on. Catch you around.